o'clock. This is Ernie Zaremba interviewing Ted.
Chess Line. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Kenya as a teacher, and I was there from 1975 through 1977.
Okay, let's start with the present. Maybe talk a little bit about where you live, a little bit about your family, career, interests, just a little bit about the present.
I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I've been here for 13 or so years. My wife, Elizabeth, and I have three sons, all boys. They're all boys. They are coming to be of college age, and so they're going off. What else is going on?
Oh, interests, your work.
I'm an attorney. I do international business transactions. I do a lot of estate work. Practice international law. I'm a certified arbitrator and do miscellaneous kinds of things. I work out of my home, which is satisfactory for me.
Okay. Now, moving back to the past, I'd like you to think about the year before you joined the Peace Corps, getting out. Why did you join? What kinds of things were happening? What process, what emotion had you join the Peace Corps?
In 1974, I was working for my then Congressman, Ben Gilman, in New York State. And he and I had had a number of discussions about career paths and opportunities and things of that nature. And he was a strong advocate of acquiring foreign experience. He sat on the Foreign Affairs Committee in the House for a very long time. And so he suggested that I look into the Peace Corps, which I did, and went through a process. And several things were offered to me. I remember one specifically in Ethiopia, but it just got too unsettled there. It was too chaotic, and so they actually scratched that mission. And so I waited, and Kenya came along. And I went to Kenya.
Okay, what was your reaction, when you found out you were going to Kenya, your family, friends?
My family was, they were of mixed mind about it, because, they didn't know anything about Africa, and for all they knew, they still ate people, but that's... But they don't, but they, they recognize that the bird had to leave the nest, etc.
Okay, so where did you go to training?
We started in, training was actually out of the country. We rendezvoused in Philadelphia and got all our shots, and then flew to Nairobi. That was a long flight because it was first to Abidjan and then Monrovia, then Lagos, Abidjan, Kinshasa, and then Nairobi. That's a long flight.
So no stateside training, just simply getting shots. And
yeah, but when we got to when we got to Nairobi, they immediately took us to Mombasa, where we spent 7 or 8 weeks in language and cultural sensitivity training.
Now, how big of a group was it?
If I recall, it was about 40 people, but it's very big. I don't really know.
And so the training consisted of language, cultural training, any kind of physical activities, particular with it, like running in the morning or anything like that?
No. I would just go down to the beach and stick my feet in the water, or maybe go to the Sunshine Bay and Nightclub.
It sounds like a pretty exotic place to train. What were your quarters like?
We were in a motel that was somewhat isolated, so we weren't in town. We were really on the edge of the city of Mombasa, more or less. And so it was kind of secluded. And your day was busy. Your classes all day. And it was, you know, immersion kind of classes. And then you'd go on little field trips to the market and to, you know, like that. To just to start practicing what you're using, what you're learning.
Get field trips to market and the other kind of field trips that you take?
I can't remember. I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't remember them.
Any particular anecdotes from training that have come to mind? Interaction with other volunteers or local people or events?
No, or, well, the only thing that comes to mind, the only thing that was unusual was I was accused of being a CIA agent, which of course was untrue. I was there to steal all their secrets.
Was this in training?
Yeah, it's just some young guy sitting, we're just sitting around at the motel, but this was an African guy, and which I found to be amusing. Since we were, I mean, the two governments were pretty cooperative. We were pouring a lot of money into Kenya at the time. And we sold them a lot of what they had, so we actually knew. They didn't need me to go find out. And so, anyhow, but that was all. But that, you know, that was actually... it was good that it happened because it sensitized me to the fact that, you know, here are these Westerners, these Mzungos, Europeans, who are coming here and, you know, what are they doing here? They're helping us poor Africans, you know, do we really need these people kind of thing? Because, you know, they have a certain amount of pride in their culture and how they live, and, you know, they're not without some wisdom. So I think there was some resentment from that standpoint, but... you know, they were accepting of our offers of help.
And how did the language training go for you? Was it very effective or not that effective during training?
Well, I think it was pretty good. We were learning Swahili, which I found to be useful in on the coast of Africa and in Newark.
How in Newark?
I'm being facetious. I could say Oakland.
Okay, now what about your site? How did you? How did that come about, traveling to whichever your site was where you ended up after training?
I ended up at a Harambe school, which is a local community school that the parents fund through tuition. And it was not far. It was just outside of Nairobi. So it was not a problem. I mean, it was, you know, they got me back to Nairobi, and then I probably took the bus out there and found the place.
So you went out there on your own? You didn't have a partner or anything going?
No, I was fine.
Were there any other Peace Corps volunteers at that school or in that?
Not at that school. There was another school, a private school, much better endowed. That was down the road. There were two volunteers there. And actually, I ended up living with them and then going to my school in the morning because they had a block building and I had a tin pot inches and plates living in an oven. So, anyhow, they had an extra room to get into.
And how far down the road was that for you?
A mile.
And would you have a bicycle to get around or walk?
I actually ended up buying a car. My Peace Corps experience was not altogether typical. I became friendly with some diplomatic families. And so I lived somewhat differently, and two, I acquired a much different perspective on the country than you would acquire just, you know, being in the bush somewhere with one particular tribe of people. So, you know, I don't think anybody else had that kind of perspective.
Now, about how far outside?
Sorry, behind you.
About how far outside of Nairobi were you, would you say?
10 miles.
And so the diplomatic families, they lived in Nairobi, I assume? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
In fact, I
you know, probably spent half the week sleeping at their house and eating at their house and having my clothes washed and living like a diplomat, which is good. It's like being a banker, but it's nice to you.
So, how far into your service were you before you got the car?
I don't recall. I was probably about 4 months into it. Maybe not four. I don't remember. But I went and I talked to the assistant director about that. And, he was okay with it.
Because it seems like to visit these other families and that you needed some way to get around.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, any particular anecdotes from school? What's a typical school day for your teaching working day?
Well, I went to teach English language and literature and ended up teaching English language, literature, health science, and African history, of which I knew nothing, but I could read the book faster than they could. It was, the day was pretty full. I mean, it was a full teaching day. You'd have a class off now and then in the course of the day, but basically you were in the classroom. I also raised some money for the school. I mean, not to toot my horn, but this is, I met some woman who was from the Ford Foundation. And, talked to her about a laboratory at the school because they didn't have it. This was basically the equivalent of a high school. And so they came up with some money. And, I went to a science supply store and, bought the skeletons and, all kinds of stuff. But as this was happening, I was talking to one of the directors of the school, and I told him what was happening, and he wanted to know if we're getting materials or if we're getting cold cash. I said, there will be no cold cash. We're getting materials. You want a rabbit skeleton? You got a rabbit skeleton. But anyhow, it was a full day, and kids were great. There was one amusing anecdote that now comes to mind. Oftentimes, I would give the kids a reading and writing assignment for maybe 15 minutes of class or something like that. And sometimes I took the occasion to read by mail while they're doing this, because the mail came to the school. So I get a letter from my mother with a newspaper clipping in it, the headlines of which are Kissinger to deliver Orange Man shoes. So what it was I had these special shoes because I had a foot problem. And I left them home. And Henry Kissinger was coming to speak at the UNCTAD conference to be held in Nairobi that year, United Nations Commission on Trade and Development. And the congressman that I worked for, set it up so that my parents could send the shoes to the State Department, and his public relations people were apparently pretty good. So anyhow, he brought my shoes when he came to Africa. So there's this article about it. I couldn't believe it. I read it to the kids; they were amazed.
Do you have a copy of that?
I don't have a copy of it anymore. It was in the Orange County Record. That would have been 1975. Orange County Record was published in Orange County, New York. When my mother sent you shoes, of course she put in tuna fish, maple syrup, everything else. She gets a package back in the mail, just the shoes. That's all they're taking. So, yeah.
So you got your picture taken with Kissinger, I assume?
No. Come pick it up at the embassy.
Did you meet Kissinger?
No.
Ah, so it was just dropped off?
It just dropped off.
PR thing.
Yeah. Interesting. It's rather
amusing. Okay, so you had your regular teaching, and then you got some funding for this laboratory. Mm-hmm. Any other kind of side projects that came up while you were there for
education? Any other kind of
side projects?
Well, I just got wrote to people in the States and had books donated and things like that. I remember, I don't remember all that I got, but I do remember getting about 120 calculus books, which was very handy.
And how large were your classes that you took?
25, 30 kids. But they're pretty well behaved. Let me take a break. Nothing else seems really noteworthy to me about the school experience. Yeah, the one thing I did like about being a teacher is that you were off several months a year, at least twice a year, you know, because it was planting and harvesting time. The kids had to be in the field. And so you go on safari. And that was great. You know, we went all over. And one of the nice things, of course, is that, you know, a lot of places you would go, there'd be volunteers there. So you'd always know somebody who knew their way around, and you had a place to stay.
Now, any safari stories? And I assume that you took your car then when you were on safari?
No. No, we took a Land Rover. It was way too rough for a car.
So you rented a Land Rover, or how did you have it?
I met some Brit who, you know, he took people out. And so several people got together and we went out. Well, that was one time. You know, there were other times when I went on my own with, you know, just another volunteer.
And then how would you get the Land Rover then, or how would you go around?
Well, then you wouldn't have one. Mm-hmm. And then you'd take buses. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, going to Tanzania, we took a bus down. I got sick up there. And, you know, we toured around there and went to Livingston's grave and the old slaveholder and Bagamoyo. That was quite a moving place, actually.
Could you say more about that, the moving place?
Well, it was the place where Africans brought from the interior were held until they could be transported to Zanzibar and sold at the slave market. And, you know, it's kind of run down now, as you would expect, but, you know, there are still pillars there which had, you know, fixtures for chains on various sides so they could, you know, tie up, you know, I don't know, 10 people to a pole or something with chains, and, you know, there were a bunch of them around. And, you know, the building was, pen was surrounded by a wall. And, you know, when you see it, you wouldn't think anything of it if you didn't know its history. But knowing its history, it's really quite new. It's like if you walked in a field from Gettysburg and didn't know there was a battle there, it wouldn't mean anything to you. But if you know what went on there, you're tremendously transported. And the same place like that, the memorial, which I'm told translated means crush your heart.
Any other anecdotes from your safaris? Breakdowns, animal stories, surprises, disappointments, moving experiences?
Well, you know, you come on all kinds of different things. We get down at the border between Kenya and Tanzania. And border towns tend to be pretty rough and dirty and whatnot. But anyhow, we saw this. Maasai guy who, you know, he was not out with his cattle anymore. He was pretty much a village guy now, which is contrary to most Maasai. And he drank, so that was everything. The way he walked. But anyhow, they, you know, pierced their earlobes and stretched them. And he had done that, of course, as almost all of them do. And he had a gold pineapple can in there. It was beautiful. You know, like a flat one, like a tuna fish can. Yeah, they're right in there, gold pineapple. Yeah.
About, like, how much growth in the industry is about to be in your studies?
Well, you know, you mentioned animals. You know, teeming with them in certain places. Where I was going in Tanzania, I didn't go to Crater or to the Serengeti for reasons that escaped me now. But in northern Kenya, I went to with the Land Rover, who went through a number of places. And one thing that, that occurred is, it was very hot. So I was riding on top of the Land Rover. On top of the Land Rover, there's a carrier rack, and you throw your sleeping bags and whatnot up there and cover with a canvas. And it's actually quite comfortable to lie up there. So that's what I was doing.
While it was moving, or is it?
While it was moving. I on the inside. If only a tenth, it's you better off. So we were driving around Masai Mara, which is one part of northern Kenya, and we came around this. I got off the Land Rover, so we stopped. And I got off the Land Rover, and I was walking again. I came around this little turn. I was still very close to the Land Rover, but I went around this little turn, and there was a female lion lying across a mound, and her boyfriend, who was not interested in having anybody around that he didn't, that wasn't him. So there I am, probably 30 feet away, 30, not more than 40 for sure. And, it would take a lion about a half a second to be on top of one. And he began to make a series of false charges. So I, of course, skedaddled, told the guy who was driving me, let's get out of here. And I was royally angry with him because he had turned the engine off to save gas. And so, there I am. And I was up on top of that Land Rover, quick as you could blink. The adrenaline was flowing. So, interesting day.
Yeah, what about leisure time? Okay, that is vacation time. What about leisure time when you weren't teaching at school and weren't off on safari or something you did in your leisure time?
Well, just hang around the hotels. I spent time with some Swedes who were diplomats, and so, I'd be over there and we'd have dinner and we'd talk and whatever.
Now, many volunteers often had, somebody do their laundry, that type of thing. Did you have that kind of situation?
Well, I got it done there at their house. They have people to take care of such things.
Any overall impressions of the Kenyans that you were around, or what would you say about them?
They're like anybody else in certain ways. Some of them are decent you like, and some of them aren't, and you don't like, and it just depends. My experience is that, certainly in Nairobi or Mombasa, and city culture, it has many similarities no matter what the city, whether it's in Africa, Latin America, North America, it doesn't matter. So that's not really distinguishing. The tribes are different, different cultures, and different attitudes toward things. It's actually, if you want to see racism, Africa's the place to see it, because the differences between the tribes are, you and I wouldn't know, but they know. And it can be really quite painful. It's like an ant walking into the wrong anthill, they just take them apart.
Now, back when you were there, Kenyatta was still president, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Now, today, Nairobi's got quite a reputation for crime, but called robbery. Was it that way back then?
No. But they didn't have, machine guns and everything else that they appear to have now.
So would you be out at night and feel fairly safe? back then?
Well, that depends on where you were. I mean, if you were in the center of town, which was built up and modern, and, you know, that's where tourists were and where official visitors were, and, you know, the police were present, you were pretty safe. But, I mean, something could always happen. And, I mean, it didn't matter whether it was Nairobi or any place else, as I was saying. But, you know, if you went to the wrong parts of town, like, you take your life in your hands. Just like if you go to the wrong part of Detroit, you take your life in your hands.
What about, often people reflect on differences between the first year and second year. Was there much of a transition for you, or did it all kind of blend together, like the first year as composed?
No, so you can, you know, that didn't, I didn't notice it. I don't recall noticing it, you know.
Any particular health problems?
Yeah, actually, two things occurred. One was, I don't know whether it was malaria or intestinal parasites, which is also transmitted by mosquitoes, which I contracted in Tanzania, and I was a pretty sick puppy. But, you know, I got over that. Finally got back to Nairobi to the physician who took care of the Americans in the country, the State Department people, and us, and I don't know who else. But anyhow, he was a specialist in tropical medicine. He wasn't sure which it was, but he gave me something to take care of. But I was, you know, this kind of thing where, you know, you couldn't get out of bed. You couldn't walk. I remember having to crawl from my bed on the floor to the bathtub to take a cold bath to lower my temperature. It was just like in the movies. I think it was malaria, but anyway, that's what happened.
Now, you got this when you were on safari, probably, in Dentezi?
Yes.
So did it hit you when you were down there?
Yes. I think I got it sitting on the beach down there. We went to some function at the French embassy. And then we had no place to stay. So we went and slept on the beach.
I assume this was down by Dar es Salaam?
Yes, it was. And then also, in 1998, or 9, I don't recall now. I had a esophageal hemorrhage, and it turned out I had hepatitis C genotype 2, which, while, you know, not conclusively acquired in Africa, is pretty prevalent there. And the period of time that it takes to really manifest itself is 20 to 25 years. So the surmise is that this was acquired in Africa. And now, I've gotten rid of the hepatitis because I went through a series of medications which I would not recommend unless you had to. But I've been left with cirrhosis. So, you know, that's life. And where I got that, my wife, who's a medical person, thinks that, you know, at the time, we were still using, those mechanical needles that they sterilized and used again. She thinks that was probably the source of it. But, who knows?
So, don't they give you, like, a big shot of gamma globulin to prevent
that's
that?
That takes care of hepatitis B or A or something, but not C. They didn't even know about C for a long time. They didn't start screening for it until probably the mid-90s or so. You know, insurance companies, when you go to get a life insurance policy, they didn't screen for it. They didn't know about it. But it's actually now has acquired an epidemic proportions. Millions of people have this and don't know it. Because it takes a long time before you know you've got it.
What are the symptoms of it?
Symptoms of that? You get cirrhosis, and then you bleed, and then they gotta do all kinds of things. I mean, everybody's different, so. I mean, ultimately, you could require a liver transplant. I don't require one now. That's possible in the future. My liver's still able to function within political battles.
Okay, any other unexpected events or relationships that come to mind?
Not right now.
Okay, what about your sense of achievement and or failure or anywhere in between, looking back?
Well, I think that the individuals that I had in class, the students, I thought that they learned a lot about Westerners, and I learned a lot about them. But, you know, in the larger scheme of things, I'd be hard-pressed to believe that it would make much of any difference. But it would in their particular lives, but socially speaking, throughout the broader society, unless one of them ends up being, a senior official, I don't think it really made that much of a difference. I've always thought that the value of Peace Corps was, while sure, there's...
Okay, the value of Peace Corps?
Yeah, it is a philanthropic part to help people who are not as well off as you are, although I think that our values in that regard are perhaps questionable. But be that as it may, the other value of it is I think it sensitizes Americans to the larger world. America has always been geographically insular. Its politics have wavered in and out of isolation. But Americans themselves don't know much about the rest of the world. And so this was a way to, I think, introduce them to the notion of globalism.
About pluses and minuses in relations and work with people of the country, as far as your concern or experience?
I never had any problems. It was fine.
And things you get pluses that came from the people?
I don't know.
In the sense of?
I became friends with some Africans, and I met a lot of Americans. That that one guy's in northern Michigan, and I was up there last weekend. He was we were in the country together. In fact, that's where we met. We met in Philadelphia. So you make some long-term friends.
Any regrets or satisfactions to just summarize things that you've seen in the world?
I mean, it was satisfying in the sense that it was a very enriching experience. And, I met a lot of good people. In terms of regrets, before I left, I had the opportunity to, was offered to me to work in paleoanthropology at the museum in Nairobi, which is Leakey's Museum, and the younger Leakey, Richard, is there, he runs it. And anyhow, I was given the opportunity to do that, and I didn't do it. I came back and went to graduate school, and I don't know, things would have been different. I wouldn't have had three boys here, and a wonderful wife, so it's okay. You never know.
A real choice point at the end of the tour. Of it.
Yeah, otherwise I would have had probably African babies.
Okay, like to overall evaluate your service in light of the three goals of the Peace Corps. The first one, providing technical assistance where requested. Just summarize that, what you'd say about that.
Well, that's really didn't pertain to me. I was a teacher. I didn't provide technical support in any kind of a way.
Educating people in that sense.
Well, I did that. And I think with, modest success.
What about the second one, to help promote a better understanding of Americans by the people served?
Oh, I think so. I spent a lot of time with them. The kids were never so happy as when I would, after school go up to their village and, just go up there and have a cup of tea with them in their hut, They like that.
and the third to help promote better understanding of other peoples by Americans.
Well, I think I've spoken to that author. I think it's a good thing to do.
Again, and finally, about the effect on you of your Peace Corps service, was there any immediate effect on you, including things like culture shock when you came back or anything like that?
Culture shock? No. Well, you know, I was, you know, the first smell, this is the sense that makes the deepest impression. But the first smell I had, I remember walking out of JFK, was garbage. And, you know, it was very unpleasant. Now, you know, there's plenty of garbage and unpleasant smells. You know, and the materialism just seemed to me, you know, overwhelming and overworked. You know, it's crazy really that you're on this treadmill of trying to acquire more and more and more. Of course, the good side of that is it gives people work. The bad side of it is that you trade your life for this stuff. So you have to figure out what's important for yourself.
What about a long-term effect on your Peace Corps experience?
Well, it's hard to sort out effects that come from that particular experience. Certainly it's there. My perspective on I think it probably heightened my interest in international relations. But, you know, I was interested in that anyhow. So, you know, to what extent it boosted it, I don't know. Yeah, I used to be a little bit amused. I was talking about, you know, the contrast between, you know, a rural society, which is basically what kind of is that policy. New York City, which is, you know, the center of material society. And I remember speaking to Africans and telling them that, look, you're really better off planning your cities so that in the morning, everybody lives over here. In the morning, everybody goes this way. And in the evening, everybody goes that way. So you don't have these, you know, horrendous traffic jams of people trying, you know, like Los Angeles. And the only reply I got was, oh, you are just trying to hold us back. But, you know, it was hard to tell. It's hard to tell them anything.
Now, this was discussions, I assume, not
ordinary people. Adults. People who were, like, in their early 20s.
So, do you remember any other discussions like that you had with them?
Not specifically.
Okay, just while you're sort of still back and reflecting on any other stories from any part you've been outside of it, you've been doing.
I guess being chased by an elephant.
Okay, that's your next story.
Yeah. I was in the Abadares, which are mountains in central Kenya. And we're up there fishing and looking at game and stuff. And
now you're fishing up there. I've heard of fly fishing. Is
fly
that
fishing.
What you did for
yeah.
trout?
Yeah. And we saw this bull elephant. Actually, it had one tusk broken off. It was unusual. And, perhaps undoubtedly unwisely, but I began to approach him, taking this picture all along the way, where, you know, his ears flat, and he just, he was catching me, too. So we had a car at that time, and so I was running for the car. The car was, of course, starting to move. I had to jump in on the run, you know, because it was not far away. Yeah. So I said to myself, that probably wasn't a good idea. I got some good pictures.
I don't, you don't have those pictures available now, I see.
I have no idea where they are.